Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Hey, don't forget, we talked about the presidential election coming up in November between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Now, there's another couple of candidates on the ballot, too, but our next president, unless something unforeseen happens of a dramatic, off-the-charts type of scale, the next president will be either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. So right. If you want to vote for somebody who's actually going to be president, you'll vote for one of those two people.
Sorry, Ralph Nader fans. You know,
Gary Johnson?
Ran, yeah, he ran. I don't think Ralph Nader's running this year, but he
still
ran.
Alive?
Yeah, I think so. He ran for president four or five elections ago.
It cost Al Gore.
Might have very well have cost
Al Gore. It would have been President Gore had Ralph Nader not run in Florida. He took enough votes away. Remember Chad County?
Right.
We all learned what
Hanging Chad County.
We wouldn't have had a Chad count in Florida. Al Gore would have been declared a winner of Florida and therefore winner of the presidency.
Right.
Against George W. Bush.
Ralph Nader, the Green Party candidate.
He cost Al Gore. He altered Al Gore's life forever.
Altered history.
Right. And so, ironically, they were both in the Green Movement. So
yeah,
it was one Green brother damaging the chances of another Green brother to be president.
Al Gore wasn't green enough, though.
Hey, the polar ice was already supposed to all melted by now. Have you got a report on that?
I think it's actually grown.
That's what Al Gore said.
He said five years.
That was about 10 years ago. He said 5 years from now, the ice,
something like that. Yeah.
All the ice will be melted.
As he was jetting around in his private jet. To warn people of the damage. That's why I always say, listen, if someone is a real believer, okay, that's fine.
Right.
I understand. You have
the
right to do that.
Global warming? Man-made global warming.
Man-made global warming. But if you are you say you're a true believer in man-made global warming, and you are not calling for no lights at night, no sports games at night, no more going to the movies at night because all those are using energy, if you don't call for that, I don't want to hear it.
No more burning down neighborhoods
because,
at night
either. Because you obviously don't believe
that's all.
Humanity's existence is hanging in the balance.
Right.
If you're not calling for those kind
of
things.
So you get on your private jet after you do.
Right. Well, you get Matt Damon, we need to take important measures. Okay, well then stop making movies that people go to at night and burn fossil fuels so they can see your movies. I don't want to hear it.
That's called a limousine liberal.
Yeah.
Do as I say, not as I do. I remember reading about Barbara Streisand. This is 20 years ago. And if this story isn't true, I apologize. But it's too good not to tell. Okay? I'll just say that. I'll just put that caveat on this. So this may be completely fabricated. But the story was that Barbara Streisand, she was a big proponent in Los Angeles of mass transit. You know where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
But the story was that she would take her RV across town to have her hair done.
I think that is true.
But I think
that's a true story.
But she was for mass transit for all the little people. That they ought to use mass transit to protect the environment.
Protect the environment.
Now, where's my RV? It's time to get my hair cut.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Drive across town.
Yeah. Let me say one more thing, and then we'll get to Neil here. We've got about 10 seats left on our Washington, D.C., Mount Vernon Spiritual Heritage Tour in September. I'm talking about in a month from now. I think we start on the 14th. It's a Wednesday night through a Saturday night. We got about 10 seats left. And unfortunately, it's not free. But it does cost. But if you want to go on our Spiritual Heritage Tour, Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon with Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation, it's going to be a wonderful time of education and fellowship and also spiritual enlightenment, if you will, about our nation's founding and our Christian heritage. If that's something you want to do with us, and you can go, you can plan this late, like I said, it's a month from now, then go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com and all the information you need to know is there. SpiritualHeritageTours.com, SpiritualHeritageTours.com, and look up all the information there for the agendas there, the itinerary, everything we do see and experience is on that website. But we got 10 seats left, and we welcome you to join us for that tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon in September. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. You want to introduce our guest?
Yeah, we want to welcome Neil Mammen, who's author of Jesus Is Involved in Politics. Neil is in studio with us here. Neil, welcome back, I should say.
Well, thank you. It's always a lot of fun to be here.
How'd you get from, now you live in Northern California.
I live in San Jose, California.
The central?
The left coast.
The central north, right?
Well, yeah, it's below San Francisco.
Hey, I've been to Mount Hermon before. How far is that from?
You're about 10 miles from where I am.
Yeah, there's a Christian conference center there.
And San Jose has a hockey team.
Yes.
San Jose Sharks.
I can't remember what they're called right now.
Oh, okay. All right. Also, well, look, Neil, look, you and Tim, you know, I'm down here. I long to hear someone say, yes, I'm a hockey
fan. He's looking for a hockey fellow. Somebody to fellowship with him here in the South.
I have, don't even know the name of the team.
He's got Fred Jackson, who's a Canadian.
Yeah,
they you know, you'll see them talking at, you know, lunch or around the coffee pot sometimes about hockey. But nobody understands what they're talking about.
Well, you know, I have been to a Sharks game.
Yeah, yeah, but you couldn't remember what they were called. Well, I say made a real impact on you.
I know Dionne Warwick made that town popular back in the 70s.
And I still don't know the way to San Jose. So.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Good thing I have my GPS, right?
The way to San Jose. Anyway, great song.
That is a great song. Yeah. Now that you sung a few bars there.
I can sing some more. We can do that a little bit later.
while we're talking about hockey.
But how do you get from San Jose? I'm just curious, and then we'll get down to business here. How does one get from San Jose, California to Tupelo, Mississippi?
Well, either you take 3 flights and pay $600, or you take 2 flights and you drive from Memphis.
Which one did you do?
I did the cheaper one, naturally.
Where'd you go from San Jose? You got on a plane in San Jose yesterday.
To Dallas.
To Dallas.
Dallas, okay. Memphis.
Okay, and then, well, if you go.
So I got in at 1:30 p.m.
Memphis is not a bad drive.
No, it's nice. Yeah.
A.M. or P.M.?
P.M. I got here.
Yesterday afternoon?
A.M., yes.
A.m. Yeah, when you come in at 1:30 a.m., you forget whether it's a.m. or p.m.
I'm like, wait, it was a night. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah. So, okay, from San Jose to Dallas to Memphis.
And I slept right through, even though it's actually almost 2 o'clock my time.
Yeah.
Well, I can't sleep on airplanes. But let's move on.
Yeah.
You guys don't care what I have to say anyway.
Man, I can sleep on an airplane. It's very uncomfortable. Your neck hangs down. But...
I didn't mean I slept on the airplane. I slept in the morning. I slept all the way.
Right.
I woke up a few minutes ago.
To make up for the 2 hours.
Okay. And barely made
it. He lost 2 hours from the West Coast. All right. Neil, you have, you got, tell us about, give us an overview of. What I best know you for, you have an apologetics ministry.
Right.
And
No Blind Faith.
No Blind Faith is on the internet at what?
NoBlindFaith.com.
NoBlindFaith.com, and you're green friendly.
If you're on the internet, I'm very
green friendly. You're green. You're
I don't use
internet
any
green.
Paper unless you print my website. And then,
yes.
Then you're destroying trees.
Then you're destroying trees. But you know what I always say? Save the wheat fields, recycle toast. You know,
save the wheat fields.
That'd be a great country song.
You know
right
what? You never really hear about other things like that.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, they
stop
they,
eating food. Right, save the wheat.
Yeah, you know. So I mean, they we grow trees to make paper. We grow wheat to make cake.
Toast. Yeah, right.
Toast. Right. Anyway, you know where I'm going.
Save the wheat doesn't sound like save the whales. I got to tell you.
I know that
doesn't track the same. Huh?
Save the wheat.
Save the wheat. Who's rallying with me?
Who's with me?
Who's with me? Save the wheat. The Republicans are destroying our wheat. Oh my word. The wheat and the whales.
Yeah.
All right. So you've got the ministry you've got, which is, as I said, apologetics. No Blind Faith.
No Blind Faith.
What did I say?
No Planned Faith.
No Planned Faith?
I think that's what you said.
That's a different ministry.
No Blind Faith.
There you go. No Blind Faith is also a good one, too.
No Bland Faith.
No
I agree with that
one. Nobody wants any Bland Faith. Uh-huh. That's why you need salt and light.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so, bad pun, I'm sorry. The what tell us how you came up with this.
With the No Blind Faith?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically the idea was, I mean, I grew up in many different cultures. I was born in Ghana, grew up in Sudan, Yemen, Jamaica, Ethiopia, and my parents are from India. So you can see immediately that I'm surrounded by all sorts of religions.
I think you're running from the law.
Well, yeah, that too. Or international spy, right? Yeah. So I'm surrounded by Muslims, Hindus, Parsis, Zoroastrians, which are Parsis, Buddhists.
There's still Zoroastrianism?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
In India, there definitely is. Yeah. Okay. They're called Parsis.
Parsis, all right.
Yeah. Hmm. So all these different religions, and I would ask myself, why am I a Christian? And my dad used to be an atheist, in fact. A lot of my cousins and my uncles are famous communists.
Wow. Too.
So, in fact, my father, my uncle was chairman of the World Council of Churches. So, which is, anyway, interesting background.
That is interesting.
What's interesting about my uncle is when he tried to join the Communist Party, they said he was too Christian to join the Communist Party. When he tried to become a priest, they said he was too communist to be a priest. So he was kicked out by both of them.
Wow.
So we've got an interesting background. But the whole thing.
You should
thing
write was, your life story. This is interesting. This really is.
I actually have my dad write his life story, too, because he's the one who traveled, right? But the real issue there was that I would ask myself, why am I a Christian? Am I a Christian just because I grew up in a Christian home? And I realized that, and my dad, once he became a Christian, he was an atheist, a professor in physics. You know, he's got like 5 degrees, and he said he taught us that, you know, your fate should be reasoned. And so I grew up thinking, well, you know, fate should be something that is you figure out practically, and it should be based on logic and reason. And so I started No Blind Faith, meaning that you should never have blind faith. Because blind faith, while you may be lucky if you pick the right blind faith, it's kind of stupid. And so all faith should be reasoned and rational and based on facts and logic and philosophy.
Well, the Apostle Peter said, always be ready to give a defense for the hope that
1 Peter 3:15, right. Yeah. And that basically the word that he uses is 1 Peter 3:15 is always be willing to give an apologia. And that does not mean to apologize. I have a Sikh friend who I invited him to an apologetics event. And I said, do you want to come to an apologetics event? It's a Christian apologetics event. He said, oh, great. Yeah, sure, I'll come. I said, do you know what apologetics is? He says, oh, yeah, that's where you apologize to me because you think I'm going to hell.
So that's what was he just kidding? Did he know what apologetics was?
No, he had no idea.
Okay.
but I explained that, that wasn't it. So apologetics, apology, that word in 1 Peter 3:15 says, I really want to say 2 Peter 3:15, but it's not, there is, it was 1 Peter. And it says that word apologia means to argue, to defend, to explain. So that's
did your friend go with you to the
conference?
He did. Good,
and
good.
We had a great chat, and I've been witnessing to him.
Yeah.
It's very powerful when you say, look, I love you so much. The thought of you spending eternity away from God really, really scares me. And he actually embraced me and said, you know, thank you. I appreciate your...
Well, you know, and I've heard... I can't remember the... it was either an atheist or a famous practicing Jew. Not that those who be, but it was somebody fairly well known was asked, "Well, do you get upset when Christians say that you're going to hell?"
Penn.
It was from Penn and Teller.
Penn and Teller.
Yes,
Penn.
That's right. And he is an atheist.
Yeah,
he is. And he said, "I would expect that if someone really thought I was going to hell, I'd be insulted if they didn't care."
Exactly.
You know, so.
Yeah. Right, Ray Comfort, witness to him. You're talking about Penn Jillette?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
From Penn and Teller, famous
Ray Comfort was on with us and talked about that. He talked about witnessing to recently at an atheist convention in, I forgot where it was exactly, but Ray Comfort talked about that. And
Ray Comfort goes to all these atheist conventions and stuff.
He's a fearless.
Was it in D.C. when they had the big gathering up there? Was it?
Yeah.
At the mall?
Ray's like 5'7". 135 pounds or something like that, and he just takes on all comers on atheists and all. He'll go anywhere, any place, anytime. Hey, so that's how you found your ministry. Again, tell them where is it on the internet and what's there.
So it's noblindfaith.com. It's got a bunch of different things. I try to do a 5-pronged approach. One, prove that blind faith is bad. Two, I try to prove that God exists without using the Bible. And I wrote a book about it called Who's Agent X? Proving that science and logic, so it's more rational to think God exists. And then I try to prove that the New Testament documents that we have been accurately transmitted and reasonably well translated over the 2,000 years that we've had them. And then I try to prove that Jesus Christ really exists, was a real human being, and then I prove that he, that everything shows that he did rise from the dead. And I use a lot of stuff from J. Warner Wallace, who's the cold case detective who's gone and looked at that. And then the last thing we talk about is why Christ had to die and why God had to punish.
So those are really the there may be some other issues, but those are a big five when you talk about discussions you're going to have at a party or over Thanksgiving dinner, or those are the things that are generally
What do people throw up at Christians more than anything in today's world?
Well, the two big things that we first have to get beyond is the problem of sin and evil.
The average American out there, let's say American, it could be anywhere.
Who's not a Christian,
The average American out there who's not a Christian, they have a real problem with the with us saying the Bible teaches that everyone is a sinner.
No, it's not so much that. It's what's interesting is there are different variations. So if I'm talking to an atheist, his first objection is, well, does God commanded people to kill everybody in the Old Testament? How do you deal with that? And I have an answer to that. But the second thing that I get in is, well, if there is a good God, why is there so much evil in the world? That's the second problem that people face. That's for the guys who I consider
that's an atheist.
That's an atheist objection I hear a lot.
Because they're saying that Christians believe in that God is a God of love. And so they're going to say, how does a God of love command? First of all, I would be impressed that an atheist would know so much Bible that they would know that killing, that God authorized killing in the Old Testament. I would say, did you finish reading the Bible? But anyway, their point is they want you to answer the, if God is love, then how come he?
Yes, commanded. So the best answer, by the way, for that is to just look at them and say, look, you are analyzing this from an atheist perspective that death is the end of all things. But if you analyze it from a Christian perspective, all death is a moving from a physical dimension to a spiritual dimension. God puts you in the playground. He can take you out of the playground anytime he wants. And he can ask his people to take you out of the playground. You go, are you subsidizing a jihadi murder? No. I'm saying if God wants to put you somewhere, he can take you out of it, and it's not killing for him, right? Now, we can analyze whether person X has really heard from God or not, but if God really gave you physical life, he can also take it away from you and give you spiritual life. By the way, just so you know, God never kills anyone completely. In other words, God will never extinguish you. You will live forever in some form or the other in your spiritual world. God, once he's created your soul, he will never destroy your soul. And that is the scariest thing to contemplate if you're not going to spend eternity with him.
Which is what Jesus said, don't fear man. Don't fear him who can kill the body, but fear him who can both kill the body and throw the soul into hell.
So my argument to atheists is you're saying, here's my atheist worldview, and your Christian worldview doesn't work with my atheist worldview. Well, yes. But if you look at the Christian worldview within the Christian worldview, it makes sense. So, because you've already presumed there is no afterlife. So therefore, death is the most horrible thing to you.
Yeah.
It's not.
What about, good stuff. We've got about 6 minutes left here, so I'd like to tackle about six major world religions.
Okay. What do you want to start with?
Right. One minute each.
You could break down each of them in a minute. That'd be. What is it you've had a lot of relationships with Muslims?
Yeah, I grew up with them. My best friends were Muslim.
Okay. What is it, what's going on? Is there something different going on inside? I'm going to rephrase the question this way. The vast majority of Muslims don't participate in jihad.
Yes.
And they don't commit acts of violence. Right. So that is a true statement. But yet you have this percentage, I don't know what it is, 8% in the Pew Research recently of American Muslims who said jihad is acceptable to advance their religious beliefs. 8% of the Muslims that were interviewed. Is it just that the vast majority of Muslims don't really practice their religion?
Yes, exactly. In fact, most of the Muslims.
So we should be thankful for lukewarm or backslidden Muslims.
You want liberal Muslims.
Okay.
But there are also the very hardcore Muslims who are not fanatic, okay, so here's the problem. If you go through the Quran and you take it literally, it is a very violent document, and you should kill all the infidels.
Who wrote the Quran, by the way?
Well,
different people?
Different people copied it from the sayings of Muhammad, okay, who said he was claiming, he gotcha. Claimed he got it from the angel Gabriel.
But it's very violent.
They're violent passages.
The Bible's violent too, though.
In fact, what's interesting about the Quran is that the earlier passages are not violent, and the later passages, after Muhammad gained power, became more and more violent.
Right.
So before he was kind of trying to appeal to more people, and then it became more and more violent. But what's interesting about this is, so my Muslim friends who are hardcore Muslims say, and I have a very dear friend, in fact, we were looking at starting a startup company together, and he says, look, the problem is Islam needs a reformation. And what has happened is that people have come in and they've taken this literally and tried to act on it, when in reality we need a reformation just like Christianity had a reformation. And so his point is that what's in the Bible is only good for that time, but not now, kind of thing. Well, his mullah in his mosque is under death threats for saying that, right? So the problem is twofold. One, there are the fanatic Muslims. There are the most of them. A large portion of them are secularists, and then there's the portion who want.
Have you read the Quran?
I have read the Quran. Yes.
All right. So let me ask you this. The Protestant Reformation was, in the view of Protestants, obviously right. Catholics would disagree, but in the view of Protestants, was a restoration of the true
exactly.
message of the Bible. Is a reformation in Islam, which your friend is talking about, is it actually returning to the original message of Islam, or is it completely transforming?
No, he wants a reformation that transforms it.
Okay.
So he doesn't want to go back to the original. In fact,
it would not be the same as the Protestant Reformation.
He calls it a reformation, but it's not similar in that sense. But what the issue, a lot of things has happened too, is that for many years, most people did not read Arabic, and a lot of the Muslim world does not read Arabic. The Indonesians don't, the Iranians don't, the Afghanis don't.
And that's the language of God for the Muslim.
Yeah.
Because that's
so you would have to learn classical Arabic and then read the Quran. So most people didn't do that, except for the Arab-speaking people in Arabia. So the rest of the people would depend on their mullah to read it and translate to them. So it was always tempered.
Yeah.
It was always tempered. Because it was illegal. In fact, if you translated the Quran into any other language, you could die. Well, they absolved people of that thing, and people were able to translate the Bible. So now people are
the Quran. Yeah.
People are now able to read the actual words of the Quran. So you're seeing a lot more fanaticism and more fundamentalism.
Mm. Neil Mamman. Neil Mamman is our guest. What's the website and what's there, Neil?
It's noblindfaith.com, and it has a bunch of different sermons and arguments for why Christianity is true.
And you deal too with Christians and politics, right?
I deal a lot with Christian politics. That's a different website. It's called JesusIsInvolvedInPolitics.com. JesusIsInvolvedInPolitics.com.
And you've written a book by that.
Amazingly, yes. Coincidentally, yes. I wrote a book called Jesus Is Involved in Politics. Why Aren't You? Why Isn't Your Church? And it goes into some detail about why every church has a duty to talk about politics and be involved politically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Neil, thanks for being in studio. A fascinating discussion. Have you ever on again sometime to talk about Hindu? Because you have a lot of probably interaction over your
lots, yeah,
yeah, with Hindus.
I don't know as much. I'm not an expert on Islam either, but I know a little bit more about Islam than I do Hinduism. I'd be interested in that conversation.
Yeah, my dad's actually an expert in Hinduism.
Okay. Sounds like we should have your dad on.
You should. He has a thick accent, though.
Okay.
Neil, how do you spell your last name, Neil?
Mammen, M-A-M-M-E-N, pronounced like ramen.
Like noodles?
Like noodles.
Okay. All right. I don't have anywhere to go with that. We don't have. I could, but we don't have time.
You can mention something about college kids.
Yeah.
And
we're out of time. Thank you for yours, folks. Keep listening to American Family Radio. Tim, Ed, we'll see you back here next time.